Here comes an electrifying episode of Registry Matters. Big cheers for our rockstar patrons, Andrew, Michael, another Michael, Denise, and Justin. Stay tuned. Oh, and always remember, FYP.
I just want to set the stage for this particular episode that it was recorded live. Well, in front of, all of them are recorded live. This was recorded in front of a live audience at the NARSAW conference in Atlanta last weekend. And it was more or less just kind of like a round table of podcasters along with a couple other folks. So Josh from Decarceration Nation was there. And then Amber and Jason from Amplified Voices were there. Obviously, I was there. Larry couldn't be there. He was having health issues. But then I also had the paralegal and attorney from NARSAW. And we were just kicking it around back and forth, back and forth. I hope you enjoy.
So showed that there are people out there who are hearing us and will listen and do have power, which I think is really important. So that does mean a lot to me. So.
Awesome. You're free to go if you need to. I know you've got a super early flight, like 4 a.m.
I have to leave at like 5 a.m.
So. I understand. Josh, thank you so much. It was great to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I'm good. Okay.
Got me awake now.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, this always, I can't go to sleep after I record a podcast. All right, where should we go now? Should we go over to Amplified Voices?
Well, so now that Josh has left and
we can keep on
putting the praise out for him and not embarrass him.
I see.
The other thing that I want to mention is he mentioned this idea that, you know, people are taking a risk coming on to his podcast, knowing what it was, so on and so forth. And then I just want to sort of relate that, if we want to sort of transition to talk about Amplified Voices, which was inspired very highly by Josh's work. Absolutely. And the work of other people and the people who have lived experience in the criminal legal system. I have to say that it is the guests that are so generous with their time, their stories, and all of that, that we really focus on at Amplified Voices, which is a podcast that uplifts the voices of people who've been impacted by the system. So when we were thinking about doing a podcast and doing something, you know, a little different, we saw a lot of experts coming on, different podcasts who maybe had written a book or all of those things. But we wanted to provide an opportunity for people who had never had a platform to tell their stories in a way that was unique to them, in a safe space, in a way that felt meaningful to them, that was not framed by the media. It was not framed by a police report. It was not framed in a way that they didn't own. So, I think that, again, Josh stepping out into his own power was really instrumental in us sort of doing the same.
Yeah, and I echo that. And then just to add on a little bit behind the scenes, Amber likes to prepare. So she gets to know, like, what the story is. She wants to have prepared questions before we do the podcast. I like to go into it knowing as little as possible.
And it shows.
But honestly, because when I listen back, like, to have that real reaction to somebody's story, so it's like I'm representing everybody listening for the first time to somebody telling that story. So that when you're hearing it, it's usually, unless we have somebody that we've known for a while, but even when we have people we know, you don't necessarily know their stories. What's different, I think, from the way we do it versus the way Josh did his podcast is we do go deep and it's very emotional. You know, we do some editing afterwards. Sometimes we get stories we don't share because they're a little too rough. But we take time after the podcast, after we've stopped recording, to do an emotional debrief. And sometimes that's as much for us as it is for our guests because we need it.
I'll tell you about Josh. Josh is a voracious reader, and he is like a massive speed reader. And some whatever criminology PhD person puts out their work, and it's some 400-page whatever. And he knocks the thing out in 2 days, and he goes and then creates the podcast, has the guest on. But he will knock out a full like textbook, whatever, in a matter of hours or days, whatever. And so he can just knock that stuff out to be so prepared for his show. Yeah. And everything was 100% scripted. He had the questions. He had a rough idea how the person was going to answer. I believe he fed it to them as well. But it was super fluid. It was really well done. And absolutely, that's why I wanted to support him. That was like, Josh, you're incredibly smart. If it doesn't sound okay, you'd have to be like the president on Air Force One and all the nukes have already, like, then the message is the most important thing. But if you can't understand what the person's saying, it's super duper important for it to sound as good as it does. I can make sure that Josh sounds good. I can't control how they do, and I'll do the best I can with whatever equipment they had. So made sure Josh sounded amazing.
I love that you brought that up, because that was sort of another like way I was going. It cannot be overstated the support that it takes to put a podcast together and the folks that sort of do the work in editing. So for us, we don't do a live podcast, but we have an amazing group of people, many who are related to me. So a little plug for the family that make things sound good. So I want to thank you, Andy, for doing that for Josh. And the other thing I want to mention is, in terms of putting out a podcast, you're on your, say it again,
357.
So I want to give a lot of props to that, because when we first started our podcast, we were so enthusiastic and we were like, we're going to put out a podcast once a week, which is what you do.
Yeah? Murder.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we went to once a month because we were very enthusiastic. So I just want to uplift the amount of work that goes into like doing this work to get this out to people. And it touches
video issues. And I think it's back. All right. So a friend of mine I haven't seen in quite some time lives here in Georgia. And I'm pretty familiar with the statute here because, well, I was living under it for a good period of time. And they didn't really even treat me this way, but there's an annual verification of your residency. So, you know, every year they're supposed to, the sheriff comes by or a deputy, whatever, knock, knock, knock. Hey, you live here? Great, bye. That's the end of the interaction, typically. But I'm telling you, they didn't do it to me for 5 years straight, maybe. Well, my friend, who will make up a name, we'll call him Tom. And they're coming by his house quarterly. And the statute, so the way that my brain thinks about this, and I talked to Larry about this, the podcast, my co-host, and he's like, if you're not required to do it, tell them FYP, essentially. But understand that they're going to increase the pressure. They'll catch you if you don't stop long enough at a red light when you're turning right on red. They'll find some way to apply pressure to you. That could be if you have some kind of partner. They could start tailing them while they're driving to and from work or whatever. They're going to apply pressure. So my question to both the paralegal and the lawyer is, what are your options? Now, I'm asking this on behalf of a friend. You're not giving me legal advice. If it were you, what would you do? See, this takes all of the pressure off of you.
Not at all. But, I mean, in that situation, I think it would be a bad idea to, like you said, to say screw you or
give them the bird?
Yeah.
To say FYP?
Exactly. Because it doesn't help your situation at all, and it will, in most cases, make things worse. I mean, if there's any type of thing that could possibly raise a red flag, it's more likely that you will create a situation where
but aren't they breaking the law?
So if it only requires them to go once, if they're going more than that to verify if they have a reason for why they're doing it, I don't think that.
But if the person has lived there for years, if the person has lived there. Okay.
So my question would be for this, because I have to go through this nonsense.
Okay.
He doesn't.
Right, you're feeling it.
Right, right. And ours is once a year, and they don't ever show up. So, but anyway, if I was in that situation, my question would be, first of all, you have no obligation to be at your house when they're there.
That was my thought.
So what are they doing? Putting a flyer on his house and say, call me, or what?
They do. And then, I mean, I don't know, because he always complies. So we don't know what happens if he doesn't. But so, and he lives on 60 acres.
Yeah.
And it's a 40-minute drive to get to the gate. And so he lives, and he has a gate.
That's right. I remember.
At the entrance of the property. Yeah. So, and it's, whatever. It's a half-mile drive, but it's probably a gravel driveway. So you're not going 50 miles an hour. A half-mile driveway is probably a good, I don't know, 3-, 4-, 5-minute drive. And then you got to come back out.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, you should come out there in your skivvies, and you should walk. And you should just stroll in. I'll be there when I get there, and just walk down there half mile, 20 minutes. Make them wait. Drag them out.
So I guess I would agree with you to some extent, Andy, but I would also agree with Larry, because my feeling is, you know, it can get rougher and rougher.
Yep.
The more you push the thing. There's a reason why they're coming there quarterly. Is it's either a new officer or something's going on.
My thought would be he is in about as rural a place of Georgia where the people that live in the middle of nowhere go, wow, you really do live in the middle of nowhere. I mean, he's on 60 acres and he can't see his neighbors, and he's chosen to live out there, which by extension means he has the most they're bored. And they don't want a PFR living in their area. He's not living in downtown Atlanta where they've got, I don't know, 5,000 PFRs. They've got 3 people, so they have nothing else to do. They're justifying their existence.
Could this be a situation where, as Paul suggested, a letter went saying, why are you, from some legal entity, went and just went to the sheriff's department and said, why are you doing this?
Statute only requires
Andy. Right. And then, as Paul suggested, sometimes that will have folks backing down and changing their practice without litigation.
I'll defer to Larry for that.
I mean, I think that sounds like a smart move. I mean, I don't see much of a downside to that as opposed to the giving the middle finger thing.
I mean, I see a lot of downside to like skivvies and middle fingers.
Just saying.
Just throwing it into the world.
Middle finger's more fun.
Yes.
You would feel a lot better. Is it economically, is it a small amount of money to hire an attorney to write this letter for you? Is it bazillions of dollars? Is it, I mean, I know I'm not asking you to put a number on it specifically, but is it under $1,000? Is it under $10,000 to ask an attorney, to hire the attorney in your county? I'm wondering if this is one of those things. Do you want the guy that lives in the area to do it, or do you want someone from out of town to do it? Because that matters.
I mean, to me, the question is, how much is the pain you're feeling from them coming there quarterly, disturbing your family and everything else? Worth $1,500 to contact a lawyer, to send a simple letter to him?
This guy is in a position where he wants to get on a houseboat and not be home for extended periods of time.
Okay.
And that quarterly thing would impair him sailing or driving, whatever boating around he's going to do.
Well, perhaps it's an advocacy play. Maybe an advocacy organization working in the state could write a letter, and that would apply equally as much pressure.
I know. So the organization in Georgia is called Restore Georgia. All right. I just wanted to get that out there to try to seed the audience with. Does anybody have anything that they would like to ask? Don from South Carolina. I don't have a microphone for you.
That's why I'm walking up here.
Oh, well, you can just talk loud.
I mean, my first take on it is, aside from the fact that he wants to travel, is the number one, the statute does not say they can't come more than once a year.
Okay.
And it only requires them to come once.
Yeah.
So they're not violating the law by coming 4 times a year. But he does not have a legal obligation to be there
right
when they come to his house.
I agree.
And if he wants to travel.
But what is he?
There's nothing in the statute that prohibits him from traveling.
I wonder how he would know if they, I mean, would he just take it from the last time that they came by and that's your annual? They might not even be logging the other 3. They're just coming by to be dicks.
It doesn't matter.
It does if on his annual, if the actual annual that's at the registration date. That
let me tell you how I handle that situation.
Please.
Because I do RV trips.
Yes.
And I'm gone for weeks at a time
right.
from my place. And when I'm going to be gone for several weeks, and I know I'm going to be gone several weeks, I call the detective at the sheriff's department, and I just give her a heads up. And I say, just so you know,
right.
I'm on an RV trip, and I'm going to be gone from this date to this date. So
do you tell them where?
What?
Are you required to? Okay, because some people are, and some people are aggressively compliant, and they'll say, I'm going here, here.
I usually tell her generally where I'm going. One time she asked for specific information, and I just ignored her. Because she has no legal right to ask me that information.
And have they
It's none of her damn business. There's nothing in the law that says I have to report that travel or anything. I do it as a courtesy to them so that if they happen to do compliance checks during that time, she's already got it in her file that I'm not going to be there during that time. I'm traveling. I'm on a vacation trip. And that's it.
I just
let it go like that. I just say, I'm going to be gone for this period of time. So just so you know, in case somebody comes by.
That sounds amazing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a perfect example of I talked about we get a lot of litigation requests for unfair practices.
Right.
But I think Larry and everybody else here, it's probably not illegal. It's just ridiculous, right? And
I get that it's not illegal for them, but at the same time, if you're not obligated to do it, then don't. That's my thought. But that's why I'm not an attorney, and I, you know.
But that's why I ignored her request for information. I mean, I told her that on part of my trip I was going to go to Honolulu, and she turned around and said, "Well, how are you getting to Honolulu, and where are you staying?" And that was when
I got you. You told her she was number one.
I didn't tell her anything. I just didn't answer the question.
That was
the end of the conversation.
Right. Now we have, just to follow up with that, there's three states that I'm aware of that you have to tell people where you're going every time you leave the
Florida.
State. Florida, Illinois, and Alabama.
Of course, now, Alabama.
I think these laws are unconstitutional, if you ask me personally, because
it is a First Amendment.
How can it possibly protect the people of your home state if you tell them you're leaving? It makes no sense. I think it legally needs to be challenged. What do you think of that, Larry? Any thoughts?
No.
Okay. Thank you. But there is a few states where you actually have to actually do this.
South Carolina is not one of them.
Right.
So,
praise God.
I don't tell them more than they have to know.
I agree with you, Don. Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So I think that there needs to be a t-shirt that says it's not illegal, it's just ridiculous.
Okay.
So let's get
sounds,
that.
Sounds amazing. My t-shirt guy is here.
All right, t-shirt
you know,
guy.
I got to tell you, with that as a fantastic segue, I would like to thank Jacob from Arkansas, who I didn't ask, and he just produced all these t-shirts. And then he gave me, or us, me and Larry, an award, and I was like,
wow.
What? All right, so he gave us this. Because it is our anniversary from, it says 8 years, so I don't have to do the math. It's written. And it's got our logo. This is just beyond, I just don't even really know what to say. I appreciate it so very much, Jacob. Thank you so much.
I would also like to mention that Jacob has also loaned me a charger this whole weekend because I left mine at home.
I understand.
About the conference.
So, good?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, I did want to mention, you know, Larry, your normal counterpart, Mr. Doom and Gloom.
Mr. Doom and Gloom.
You know, I've learned a lot off of Larry over the years from his legal expertise and such, and I've gained a lot of perspective on different things and understanding of the registry laws and such from him, so just wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Doom and Gloom. He's not always Mr. Doom and Gloom, but he's just—he's kind of like glass a third full kind of guy. He does have some sound advice, and he's extremely good. If you need someone to help you with legislation, I would go to nobody else within Narsaw than than Larry. He is the man.
He is a pain in the ass.
Well, yeah. Yes, and he knows that.
He does.
Right?
He does. No, but he is possibly one of the smartest people out. I mean, like the smartest person I know. He is up there. But boy, like, if you want to get into a debate with him, first of all, don't interrupt him. If he is speaking, don't speak. And when he is done, he will stop and let you speak. So those are the rules. And if you can make it past that one, you should be really okay. But if you're like, but I just. Are you going to let me finish? And he will get irate and he will hang up on you. And don't ask him for advice and then argue with him for the opinion you asked for. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, audience, cue up any questions. Does anybody have anything that they would like to ask from more like a humanist kind of like personal stories time thing or a legal question or... If you want to ask a tech question, I would field it. Anybody going once?
On any topic.
Feel free. I mean, I don't know. I got this great panel up here.
Pick your topics.
Nothing? You asked.
Please. It's so unrelated.
Go for it.
Well, okay, so I've asked a few people at the conference, and I am very, very curious.
First name and location.
I'm Isabella. I live in Chicago, which is in Illinois. and I use she and her pronouns, and I've asked a few people specifically about in the state that you all each respectively live in, what the registry requirements are for people experiencing homelessness. Because in the state of Illinois, a person experiencing homelessness is required to register in person once a week. And they have to go to the police station. There's only one station you can do it at. You wait in line for hours. And when it's your turn, you fill out a like placard card thing indicating where you slept and for how many hours. So for example, I slept on the red line from 10:30 p.m. to 4 a.m., etc. And so I am like every day. So for the 7 days from the last time you registered, you fill out, and I can show people a picture later.
And you said this is unrelated?
And this is in, I will honestly say, I don't know if this is the whole state. Maybe Rob, maybe you know.
It is the whole state.
Okay, great. So I live in Chicago and this happens. And I mean, we have a disproportionate number of unsheltered people on the registry, as you can imagine, because shelters and housing programs, yada, yada. So I am curious, what the landscape is like for homeless people on the registry in other states, and B, like what advocacy and legislative advocacy has looked like in other places, because it seems to me like it's pretty freaking rough in Illinois, specifically for people who are homeless.
Before the legal people weigh in,
yeah,
this is Jason. I just want to state that any society that does this sort of thing is not a functioning society.
Sure.
This is gross.
That's
right?
A given.
Yeah. No, I just want to say it out loud, right?
Yeah,
it's just inhumane, and it's horrible that we treat people this way. So, you know, we and again, I'll let them speak in a second because I don't have any idea. But in terms of the registry in general for homeless, you're speaking specifically for homeless people. But I'm just going to go back a second and just say that going beyond that, my personal view is that the registry in general is an inhumane practice.
Agreed.
That should be abolished. And
yep.
I want to make sure I'm saying that tonight and the Registry Matters podcast, because we don't say it enough. And we need to make sure we're constantly saying it. Even when we're advocating to get some people relief because of this or that, we need to be saying it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But to have it, this is just one of the awful things that we have to say. So, legal folks?
Anyone else, I want to hear about advocacy, legal, even what happens in your state. I'm just so curious.
So, I would say, and I'm familiar with the Chicago 400 and all those things.
Yes.
So, I've talked to many a registrant that live in their cars.
Yeah.
Because of all the issues that you're all well aware of. It's extreme in Chicago. I think it's extreme in some places of Florida, right? That people living under the bridges and all that stuff. Rural states like where I'm at, it's very uncommon because you can find a shack out in the middle of the woods and just start living there. So the question is, you know, I mean, is it illegal for them to require that much information? I would say, of course, I don't give legal advice. I would say, no, it's not illegal. Because they would say there's a rational basis for us to know where you're at because you're a danger, you know, even though you're not. So that's kind of my legal answer. Now, can you file litigation for stuff like that? I'll tell you what, one of the best attorneys I've worked with is Mark Weinberg. Oh, and you guys are blessed.
We love Mark.
Mark and Adele. And I don't work directly with Adele very often, but Mark and I talk all the time. And I really value his legal opinions. But if there was somebody to address something like that, he's not afraid of big cases. I mean, he takes on very difficult cases. Paul Dubling's the same way. They're not afraid of those type of cases. So my opinion would be, it's not illegal, it's ridiculous, it's unfair. But I would, perhaps, Larry, I don't know if you want to comment on this or not, that the frequency of reporting required for these people that are...
Well, I've seen, as far as the homeless population, I had a number of cases for failure to register for people who didn't have stable housing. I think there was a decision, not necessarily in my department, but there was a decision that kind of focused on that and even went into, this is unconstitutional. I don't know if it got appealed because I haven't been following up on New York law recently since I've been working doing this. I've been really focusing on the other cases, but yes, it was definitely an issue. And just, it wasn't their fault. Like, it just was a situation that you thought maybe if you explained everything and they saw what was going on, that they would try to be fair about it, but then you get a very similar case a month later. And or after that case was resolved, the person's back out, but still homeless.
I guess that is maybe the part that I should have said and didn't say, is like, when you think about administrative violations that result in reincarceration,
yep,
you're looking at once a week instead of once a year, right?
Right.
And you're looking at who's being impacted. It's people who sleep outside. And so like the likelihood of failure to register is so great.
Yep.
And in Illinois, a failure to register conviction, your first one is 3 years in prison.
Oh my God. Georgia, it's only a year.
So like the risk and who faces the risk is so blatantly targeting. And like, again, it's not illegal, it's ridiculous, but I guess that's the...
And are some of your population wanting that?
I mean...
Do they want to have, you know, three hots and a cot, so to speak?
I would say that that would be the exception and not the rule.
Packouts,
and that's
where it
comes from. My
what? Packouts.
Well, we have the three warms and a cold, and a cement slab.
And mystery meat. Right. It's not three hots and a cot.
So I might want to just like add to the conversation because I just felt, just I'm going to be honest, felt a little triggered by you saying three hots and a cot.
Yeah.
That the idea that all these folks are homeless because they would be homeless anyway just doesn't bear out by the evidence. These folks, which I spent some time when Chicago 400 came to New York to do a wonderful show, which actually gave rise to a lot of us coming together and forming Restorative Action Alliance,
right,
was that people had the opportunity to have housing and they were being litigated or they were being legislated into homelessness by these practices. So I think we just need to like make sure that when we're talking about this, that we are using that type of language. It's not like, oh, these people are just like homeless because of a number of different factors. There may be to some extent some truth to some of that, but by and large, people are homeless because of these laws.
Right.
Am I characterizing that correctly?
Yeah. Yes.
And
it
yet,
perpetuates the cycle of chronic homelessness. So even if someone is homeless for additional reasons, it ensures a cycle of chronic homelessness with an inability to access shelter and housing.
Right. And you asked about other states.
Yeah, I'm just
and curious. in terms of like working with the homeless people who are unhoused, right? The population, the only group that I know of that's doing that with the Reddit, with people who register is the Chicago 400.
Right. Yeah.
And like I know like in Connecticut or in New York and some of these, you know, when we reach out to people, we're reaching out to people who have computers, we're reaching out to people who we can access or who might be reading the paper if we write an op-ed. For us to go and work with the people, I mean, that's a whole other type of advocacy, as you know, to go and meet with the people who are homeless or who don't have a house. And of course, as a lot of these laws that keep people out of shelters, it's just a horrible thing that we really don't address quite enough anywhere.
Yeah, and I do want to just give a shout out to like Legal Aid in New Haven, who is like addressing these, trying to like address these issues in Connecticut. So,
all right, next, I can give you another shirt, but okay. Please come on, audience participation. Someone's got a question about their situation. Eye contact, I'm focused on you. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I was paying attention.
I understand.
That's the bare minimum, Scott.
I'm scanning the vast audience and I'm like, no, everyone's like this, and then you're like,
yeah, I mean
you've got a hand.
I'm a registrant, and I mean, there's from Virginia. I'm Scott from Virginia. I think I've shared this with a couple people, and some of the people that are here from Virginia as well. I actually just realized that this isn't part of our the rules, but my compliance person, I'm self-employed, luckily, and blessed in that facility. But my state trooper comes in person, full uniform, and that's not part of our code. And it prevents me from moving forward in life. I'm not happy being self-employed in what I'm doing. And I do have opportunities to move forward in life, but I know that the moment I get another job, the trooper I have is gonna show up in full uniform. Even though the code itself says they just have to verify. So that could be a paycheck or a stub, but you know, where I'm at, they just want to show up in person.
First name?
Scott. Yeah.
Well,
so I guess my question would be, I mean, is that one of those things? Maybe you, I don't know, hire a lawyer for maybe a letter and try that route, or just...
To do what? What are you asking them to do?
I mean, to get some relief. I mean, can you not show up in
full costume? You're saying he shows up at your work, right?
Yeah, like if I... So I'm...
You inform your employer before you start working there?
They don't care.
Well, I don't have to tell a future employer anything like that.
And so you are like downscaling because you don't want to deal with having the cops show up at an actual, like a real...
There's no point in me applying anywhere because that's pretty much game, set, and match when a state trooper in full uniform comes and talks to my boss and say, or future boss and says, hey, you have a register to work in here. I mean, it's insane.
You'd have to disclose it on the front side.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, first name Scott?
Yes.
Scott, listen, when I got out, you know, I had a master's, doctorate, everything else. I couldn't work anywhere. I applied to 82 places. Subway was the first place that hired me. I only worked there 3 days, so I'm not really a good sandwich artist. But so I went and worked for the state for scrubbing toilets at Welcome Center. I figured every person that entered our state should be welcomed by a sex offender. I mean, I thought it was
reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. So I did that for a while. But the point is this, and I have a lot of people that call our legal hotline and such with this issue. They just can't get work because in their mind – they're going to get fired as soon as the police come to their house, their workplace. Most states don't do that, but some do. I don't think it's a good policy, but they do. So the issue is, first of all, find out where other registrants work at. There, for those states, for example, this is a job hotline. Like in some states, they put your job site on there, right? All you have to do is go to the registry and look at all the places where all the registrants work. That's how you get jobs.
How you find housing too?
That's right.
It's a job site for registrants. Yeah. So, and the other thing I would say, Scott, is to get through this hump, and it took me, you know, several years to do this. Just like Josh, I mean, it's almost like a bull in a china shop, where you have to be so resilient and I'm not going to say not afraid, but be willing to confront the rejection repeatedly. And if you do that repeatedly, it just, you know, like Josh said, I'm not sure exactly how this happened, but if you just keep going at it like a bull in a china shop and just keep applying and applying and applying, eventually somebody's going to have empathy and say, you know what, I don't give a crap. You're working here. You're a good employee. You're a good guy. Maybe you made a mistake in the past, but we're going to give you the opportunity. It will turn out, but you just cannot say, I'm not going to do anything because of the possible rejection when the cop shows up or what have you. So that's just my two cents with that. But
did you have a follow-up point, or was it new?
Yeah, basically a follow-up point. My name's John. I'm from Florida. And we have 67 counties with 67 different codes and violations and everything. And we have a lot of counties that have a lot of bad actors, the people you want to say FYP to. In those counties, they compound their problems exponentially, like you mentioned about the forfeiture and everything. I live in a county that's pretty laid back. You know, that you can communicate with the officer that comes out and checks you out. In fact, he hasn't been by my house in a couple of years, you know. But we communicate on a very good basis. I call him up and say, look, I'm coming to Narsal. You know, this is the address. And just we'll have a nice trip, basically, you know.
It's good.
And that's the way it is. And I'm going to travel afterwards, you know. I don't know how I'm going to be long I'm going to be gone. Well, have fun. Those are the responses. And he has the lowest problems of all the counties around by treating people with respect and courtesy instead of trying to cage them up all the time, which all you get from trying to cage somebody up is rebellion. So if they could get that, those words across too. But it has to start someplace. And unfortunately, it has to start with us. You have to give to receive. So give them respect and in time, and it's hard to do, by the way, because people don't accept respect very well or very easily. So,
John, because you're roughly the same age as Larry, I'm going to give you the doom and gloom shirt.
Oh my God. Are you calling Larry old or John young?
Larry claims to be 180-something, and he was the Secretary of War under the Lincoln administration.
Oh, my God.
And Jacob, you had follow-up too?
Yeah, I was just going to follow up to Stephen's point about using the registry to look up job employment. Some states don't allow you to do that.
What?
In California, it's actually against
the law. Oh, you can't even look up what
you can't do in Illinois either.
What do you mean you can't look it up?
Not for employment.
But
well, in California, it's illegal for a person who's registered to actually look on the registry.
Okay. Will you look them up? Will you look up for me?
Yeah.
Where?
Yes, I will.
In Illinois, the job place
where is that?
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Like a 10-page achievement?
No, like,
they're not allowed to look on their own website.
They have to have someone else do it.
Yeah, like,
But that's state by state. Wow. So, right. But do they show place of employment in Virginia? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
same laws.
Okay. There you go. Do you have a question, John?
I just wanted to add that if you have a state NARSOL affiliate in your state, for example, Pennsylvania once a year, maybe more often, pulls our entire list as PARSOL. We PARSOL the information. We use AI tools to see employers that are on there more than 3 times.
Nice.
Which gets past the, my uncle owns a company and they hire. So we have a list of the top 15, 20 employers in Pennsylvania that hire 3 or more people on the registry. People call us and ask us where they can get jobs. We give that to them. So ask your state affiliate to do that. And then they say, we don't know how to do that. Marshall knows how to do that. Andy knows how to do that. So so ask your state affiliates for help.
I saw a hand. Yes, ma'am. I keep seeing your name, and I...
Yeah, it's Kim from Kim. Virginia.
Very good. Oh, another Virginian.
Yeah. Friends.
Okay.
So I just want to add to Scott's point that it's not just about your employer finding about, you know, you being on the registry, but this is a matter of, to me, more public shaming.
That's what it all is anyway.
It's a matter of respect and right to privacy. And not just the employer, but now you're outed to everyone that works there. So then you have a whole other set of problems that they're putting on you, and they intentionally show up like that to humiliate you. So it's not just about the job.
I think you're absolutely correct there.
And that's what I was getting at. I mean, I have two kids, you know, and they're getting to the age where I've had to have to talk with my technical. You know, dad made some bad decisions 10 years ago. And, but, you know, anything I can do to, like, kind of sort of try to get past some of that. I mean, I'm not, whatever, like, whatever happens, happens to me. But, like, I do have a neighborhood. I have a 2-year-old. And, you know, I want to make them proud. I mean, I'm in school right now for social work. Like, I hope to one day make a difference on a different scale than what I'm doing right now. But there is a fear of embarrassing that. I mean, it's not necessarily me being scared to go out and get rejected. Like, have you ever rejected way so many times? Like, if you're a resident, you can get used to that real quick. I mean,
absolutely.
That's right.
It's really just whatever little reputation I have left and my daughter's reputation. So, and that's what I was asking, you know, what do you do in that situation? I mean, do you just take it? I mean, do you write a letter?
I would say, Scott, like, how long have you been on the registry?
10 years.
Well, usually about that point, people get to the point where they don't give a flying crap what people think anymore. I got to be honest with you. The guys that have been on the registry for 20, 30, 40, they don't give a flying crap about it at all. They could care less. They don't care about your reputation. Because remember, your reputation lives in somebody else's mind.
Right.
You can never control that. Because they always can think what they want to think. But your integrity is within you, and that you can control. You have complete control over that. So, but I would say you're getting right about the age where you're not going to, you know, the length of this time.
Oh, yeah.
Amber's going to.
Every year
it's
less.
Yeah.
Amber's going to weigh in now. Amber's going to weigh in.
I just want to push back just a little bit on that. And I love you. But there is a different dynamic when you have children and you want to protect them. So I think that it can be a yes and. You can stand up and be a role model for your children in saying, you know, this is how this is affecting me. And think about what will happen if you do not speak up and step into your power. That will affect your children. That's a calculation that I make all of the time. However, there are situations where you have to weigh the risk and benefit of how it affects other people in your life when you're making decisions, when there may be other avenues or decisions that you could be making. And that's very real. I want to give a quick example of that. So we had a situation where it was fine. Probation said that my husband could go to the school to meet with my daughter's guidance counselor. And he was like, I'm going to be involved with my kids, this and that. But when we went to the school, they checked him in at the front office. The woman starts waving her hands wildly, is freaking out, calls security, and has my husband escorted to the guidance office while they're changing classes.
Oh.
And it was very embarrassing for my daughter. And so my husband made the calculation at that time that he would do that in a different way. Yes, he had every right. It was perfectly allowable to do it in that way. But he made a calculation to say, I am not going to go in person for meetings because I care enough about my daughter to protect her from that. So I just wanted to share that perspective.
That's another. I wrote my petition about 5 years ago. I sued Virginia, and I didn't actually take my daughter to school. That's a tier 3. And that's one thing I have to weigh sometimes, though, is, you know, someone in the line can see me, and even though I have permission to be there, what kind of fallout is my daughter going to be? I'm allowed to be there. I have state permission. But, I mean, there is, like, you know, she's 10, so what embarrassment factor? What is she going to get picked on at school? Like, you know, because I am identified. You know, I mean, I have my state police Facebook, so... You know, it is something that you have to think about with kids.
The other thought for, you know, your situation, Scott, you know, you may also want to think about saying, you know, this is what is happening when you show up, and writing, even thinking about crafting a letter that say, I've been super compliant, this is who I am, this is what I've learned, you know, something like try to appeal to them on a human level. And I know that's not going to work in every situation, but it might work in that situation where you say, this is, because I'm thinking about like when I was on probation, every time I'd get a new officer, I'd write a letter and before I even met them saying, you're going to read a file about me that has all sorts of crap, but I want you to hear from me who I am and what I'm about. And maybe, like, you know, appeal to them and say, you know, when you show up, it traumatizes my children.
Aren't you assuming they're literate?
Or that they care.
Yeah, there would be,
but
also...
No, I'm going to assume that they're literate. Okay. I'm going to, you know, so I assume
that's
positive. I do assume positive intent in some cases. So, but maybe, you know, maybe 9 times out of 10 it doesn't work, but in the last one it does work, right? So, and if you're doing it, I wouldn't come at them confrontationally or try to, like, threaten or this is what I'm doing. I got a lawyer involved. It'd be like, you know, this is what's happening to my family now for something that, you know, appeal to them. When you show up like that, it traumatizes my 10-year-old. And this is somebody that's in the community who never caused anyone any harm. I'm going to be super compliant if you want me to come in, whatever. But... you're hurting my child, and see if you could appeal to them.
I mean, sometimes it's just a good idea to, like, be able to imagine something different will happen rather than foreclosing the possibility that people will show humanity. Because I have found in my own experience that people surprise me all the time. People are... Can I say dick? People are dicks.
You can say whatever you want. I
mean,
really don't care.
Like, people are dicks sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes people really surprise you, and it's inspiring. And so don't foreclose that opportunity that someone will show some humanity.
Our branding says FYP, and you all know what the F stands for, right? You can say it. Follow-up, I want to – hands are coming up, and I don't want to drag.
Steve, there does come a point where you don't care about your reputation, like you're not worried about that anymore. But there also comes a point where you're tired of being bullied,
yeah,
and you're tired of cowering to these people, and you want to take your power back. And to me, that's what this is about with Scott. Like, I don't have to put up with you showing up like that.
But
you know,
you might. You might have
you
to.
You can at least push back. Stand up for yourself.
So I would say, listen, I appreciate you guys' humanistic approach. Amber,
we
I can probably
legal,
learn a lot,
the legal,
a lot from you.
We got, like,
my, I don't work in advocacy like many of you do. I guess I do.
Whole team.
That is true.
That's right.
And that's actually my point.
Where your efforts are best applied.
Right.
Do that.
And that's kind of my area of expertise. But as I think you guys, through restorative action, are showing, there's more than one way to address these issues. I really liked his approach of telling them the effects on your son, because that's what you care about. You don't care about you, right? You can handle it.
Yeah, like showing them I really like that too. Like show them, you know, maybe write a letter or have a private conversation.
They may not be thinking about that at all. As a matter of fact, I doubt they probably are. They might not have kids.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I don't have kids in the house anymore, so I don't think about that as much anymore. When you do have that, I mean, that's obviously your primary function. But I appreciate all your comments.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I honestly don't remember what I was saying. But I will say that I've made some big, like, it doesn't always work, but a really strongly, like, thought out, well-rationed letter really can change people's behaviors, you know. It helps me feel like I've gotten a lot of my, like, Kim, like, out sometimes.
That's not how I
describe it.
Kim's
her. It's, like, helpful for myself. And I'm not saying that I said it, you know, when I said it, it's her. I soften it up. I make it, like, a little lovey at the top, and, like, this is really hurtful. And here's all the reasons that it's hurtful. And then a little, like, aiming for something better. Like, can we do better? And, you know, sometimes it works.
And
when
then
it
you
doesn't
could,
work, you can forgive yourself. For, you know you tried.
And then you could go back and use Brian's presentation about using AI to help craft it better.
Yes,
that's
so important. Yeah.
There you go.
Please, I don't want to drag this whole thing out. I'm happy to stay here as long as there's conversations going on. So anything from anybody? We've been at this, it's probably a little over an hour, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, and time flies when you're having
time
fun. Deanna, I know you have a question. I know you do. Okay, no shirt for you. Desi?
I have a question.
Miss Minnie Mouse.
I have a question. The question is, what does FYP stand for again?
I thought we went through this. Do I have to do this story
just
again?
Just say it.
So we are a nonprofit, and it could reflect poorly if I actually said what it meant.
You want someone else to say it?
I would be like, what is your name?
Fuck
you,
people.
I think that fits.
And
please. Yeah, fine. it fits because that, I would argue that the problem that people have with the registry, I think it's really just, it's not just two, but the two biggest things are some kind of residency presence or work restrictions, the 1,000-foot, 2,000, whatever it is, and that your name is public. If we could get rid of those two things, are people still going to complain and fight? Yes. However, your neighbors don't know, and you are not so constrained on where you could live. Even if they were reduced down to hundreds of feet, 1,000 is a really long way, and it has to be as the crow flies, so it could go through the Grand Canyon to the other side, and you're never getting there. But it's 1,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Or in Florida, in many places, it's 2,500. Alabama, I think, is 2,500. Just the statewide? I think.
Just 2,000.
Oh, sorry. Just two.
He's like,
not
just.
I mean, it's basically, you know, it's like just shy of a half mile. It's insane.
My favorite law in Alabama is you can't go
favorite.
To the, you,
a
as a registrant, you can't go to the beach unless you get permission.
Yeah.
It just seems insane.
Anything from anybody?
Why that's legal, I don't know. It should be challenged. Seems like a litigation request.
Jason, yes?
I just want to, if we're getting towards the end,
I believe
I talked about Josh. I just want to, again, say what a wonderful job you and Larry do with Registry Matters.
Thank you
and
very
listening
much.
To you. You know, I'm somebody that listens when I'm in my basement exercising. So I don't know how other people listen, but it's always good to have that familiar voice talking about issues that matter to me. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Nothing else? John?
I would say for all of these topics, and I'm always going to come at it this angle, which is how I am. Depending on where you're at, when you get involved in some level of advocacy, you want to be in the advocacy for the big picture to help people beyond just you. However, while you're doing that, you're helping yourself. And one of the things that can help me, for example, is Carsall gets a chair at the Pennsylvania Reentry Council, which is a program of the Pennsylvania Attorney General's Office. You know, the people who are there, which is a very strange part of me. We had, Andy was there, Andy asked all the questions, the Executive Deputy Attorney General keynote our Carsall conference. So when I say to my probation officer, I'm going to travel with the Executive Deputy Attorney General to speak at the thing, they don't question me. When I go for anything, I lead with, as a representative of the Pennsylvania Attorney General's Pennsylvania Reentry Coalition, I have learned this, and this. So as you build those connections through advocacy, being involved in things, and this isn't just like the managing director of Parcel. This is anybody who has that. Like Andy could probably call the executive director, attorney general. Remember when they asked you these 1,000 questions when you were in Harrisburg?
I do.
Amber was there. Amber could probably go back. So as you go to these things, like there's a strategic thing for your organization, but there's also a strategic piece for yourself.
Absolutely. If I may indulge, so you brought up of like telling them what you're doing as far as I'm going to go travel, I'm going to meet with the so-and-so, the executive director of the whatever. So Larry and I had been, I don't know, we were on episode two or three, and I was getting materials. I was getting microphones, and I was getting this stuff. But I ordered this box of foam to put up on the wall to dampen the sounds. And I chose my words very poorly, as my mail carrier is like bringing this big, this big box that weighs nothing. She's like, why'd you get a box of foam? I said, to soundproof a room. And in the next week or two was Halloween. And, you know, you can't have your lights on and, you know, all the rules of Halloween. And I'm hosting, I'm doing, Narsal used to do these like 6-hour marathon calls on Halloween to provide support to people while they're stuck at home so they could call in and listen to something while you're sitting there waiting for the popo to come knock on your door. And so they come knock on the door, and it's not one officer, it's not two officers, it's like eight. And I live in this like 1,000-foot little apartment, and they all come in, and you know, they're like standing around shoulder to shoulder, and they can't move. And the guy comes up, and he's like, what is this I hear about you doing a podcast? And I was like, or I guess he asked about the phone. He's like, I hear you trying to soundproof a room. And I said, that is correct. I have launched a podcast with a lawyer to redress my grievances with the government. I'm exercising my First Amendment right. And his head started spinning like The Exorcist and all. He's like, what are you doing? So
hilarious.
That's what happened. And they called me up to the supervisor's office, and I'm sitting there, and it's even in a smaller room, and there's three of them. Like, tell me what you're doing again. I said, I am, and I changed it because Larry's not an attorney. Not this Larry, the other Larry. And I told him, I said, I'm doing a podcast with a legal professional to redress my grievances with the government about the registry. And he goes, are you targeting kids? No. Good luck. And I walked out. But I walked up there, and I had in my wallet, I had every phone number I needed. I had Larry's phone number because he's like, are you going to need money to get bailed out? I was like, yes. And I had, you know, my uncle's down. I had all the numbers there in my wallet just in case I got arrested so I could start making some phone calls to work out the next part of the process.
Wow.
And that was episode 2 or 3 or somewhere around there. Because obviously if we started on the 18th or 22nd and then it was Halloween. So we were not very far into it. But they were unhappy with me. And here we are. But and then by extension, I will just share. I don't think that I would be the right person to go speak to legislators. That's how I feel. That's my own self-image. But what I can do is I can deliver Larry or others, and I can deliver their voices through tech. And so by extension, that's what I have done for Narsal since, 2015, start with helping them with email. That's what I can do. So if your level of advocacy is not writing bills, talking to legislators, they need help. And all these different organizations, your state affiliate, that is where the action is going to happen with you at your state level. Doing whatever you can deliver, whether that's talking to people, whether that's providing tech, whether that's writing, whether that's encouraging taking phone calls from other registrants. That's what I believe. So, anything else before we cut out? Anybody? Deanna? Nothing?
Is it
bedtime? We're there. This fires me up. I mean, it's going to take me an hour to fall asleep now. But if we're done, I thank everybody, the panel, Amber, Jason, Stephen and Larry. I don't say these names very often. Amber, thank you guys. Jason, Stephen, Larry.
Fine.
Yes.
Very good. Voices thing tomorrow at 9 a.m. Right.
Absolutely.
Amber, how can people, Jason, how can they find your podcast?
Do it.
You can find the Amplified Voices podcast at amplifiedvoices.show or on your favorite podcast platform. You just need to look for Amplified Voices podcast. You can also find it on YouTube. So please check it out. And thank you, everyone, for being here.
Stephen, how can they find your podcast?
How would
they
listen to your podcast?
how would they reach out to NARSOL on the webpage?
If they want to send a legal request, they go to our website and hit submit your case. And
if they want to send you an email?
My email is paralegal@narsol.org.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Larry, do you want to give it up?
He takes all of the...
Oh, he's your secretary.
I'm
going to
send so many emails.
You've got the PhD... sending you, like, your secretary? Wow. Okay. John, one more time. That's it.
Hi.
Hello.
One of the cool things you can do with this podcast, become a patron on Patreon.
Well, thank
and
you.
And get on the Discord server.
Yes.
And then you can participate in the recording of the podcast every week-ish. There.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Thank you guys very much for coming. Woo! So very much.
Good. Thanks, guys. You did a great job.
I think we should start a podcast just because it would be fun going back
yeah.
and forth.
I'm a good target for you. Let me correct you. But I don't really.
I read it in the room. Different things you guys said, but somebody was commenting about me nodding my head, so I didn't know how to like joke. I think you're right.
Take that.
And not nod my head, so I just like tried to have a stiff neck.
You know.
You've been listening to FYP.